The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, uupinfo.org. And New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Westchester County, New York Executive George Latimer. He's a Democrat. Welcome, George. Always a pleasure to talk to you and to find out what's going on.
Pleasure to be with you.
So my question for you is this. Is New York government out of favor with voters? I mean, when I talk to people, I get the traditional, they're all a bunch of crooks and nobody trusts them. What do you make of this distrust in the legislature and in the Democrats and Republicans in general?
Well, you know, Alan, I think we're in a cynical time, and it's been advanced by the fact that journalism really, you know, will spotlight the foibles of all of us as individuals, but it's not as interesting. Doesn't sell newspapers or get eye clicks to talk about the accomplishments of government. And so naturally you get a steady diet of this got messed up and this guy did this and this person got arrested for that. And it certainly leads the person who doesn't follow government closely to believe that, yes, they're all crooks or they're all, you know, bad people. You know, what people do forget is that every day when you get up and go about your business, the water runs in the sink, the toilet flushes, the traffic light works. You drive on roads that may not be perfectly paved, but they're not ramshackle third world country roads. And so much of what happens in the society, the government does functions well, but we naturally focus on the negative. So the distrust grows. I do think in New York State, there is a geographical reaction to these things. If you live in New York City, I think you have one reaction. I think if you live in the more rural parts of the state, you have a second reaction. And coming from a suburb, as I do, it's a bit of a third reaction. And I think there's less of the anger and discomfort in Westchester than you might be experiencing, you know, in the heart of the city or in parts of the rural parts of the state.
So what's it like to be a Democrat in Westchester County?
Well, the county has changed. We talked about this. You know, Westchester for many years ago was a Republican bastion.
Sure.
And it has evolved into a strong Democratic area. We've had a lot of success, even last year, when Long Island and the lower Hudson Valley won Republican. Democrats won strongly in Westchester. I had a good reelect, and up and down the line, we did very well. In many ways, the old Rockefeller Republicans of Westchester have just become more moderate Democrats, given the rightward turn of the Republican Party nationwide and to some extent in New York State. So in Westchester, you know, you live near New York City, but you're not New York City. You have, you know, high quality of life. We have been able to, Democratic administration, lower taxes the last 3 years. Our crime statistics are down. I know they're not down in the subways of New York City, but they're down in Westchester, crime is. And we've been able to make capital improvements. So I think in general, we're fortunate. And we have more of a working relationship between Republicans and Democrats in our county. There are some other counties that have that relationship as well. But we don't have the kind of really divisive politics. There's an element in each party that really sees the other party as the enemy. But to the greater extent, the corporate Republicans of Westchester, you know, make common cause with the moderate Democrats in Westchester. We seem to be able to move things forward. But I recognize that's not universal.
So what is the imprint of Trumpism on Westchester Republicans?
You know, it's interesting because I think many Republicans in Westchester County are conservative, but they're conservative in the traditional ways. They want a strong military, and in local terms, that means a strong police force. They want lower taxes. They want to see, you know, America standing up for itself in the world scene. But they don't necessarily embrace some of the social conservatism that has become de rigueur in certain circles. They are pro-environment. They're pro-choice. And so they're in an awkward situation where the Democrats don't exactly satisfy them, but the Republicans don't either. And then it becomes individuals. If an individual candidate, Republican or Democrat, can appeal to that portion of the Republican Party, they can be successful. You know, think of George Pataki as an example, as an exemplar of the more recent version of Westchester Republicanism. but sure. There are not many of them these days.
Now, Pataki, at one point in this run-up to this current election, said, and I don't want to misquote him, but I thought I read, maybe I should run for governor again after serving three terms. What would you think of that?
Well, I think, years go by quickly, and when you're out of office for a certain amount of time, people tend to forget you. I was in the state legislature in the beginning of my assembly career when Governor Pataki was at the end of his gubernatorial career. But I do remember him, and certainly I knew him in Westchester politics. He's on the other side of the county from where I live. But I think his brand of Republicanism works in Westchester. Now, winning a Republican primary statewide, I think of Rick Lazio, who was conservative but not as bombastic as Carl Paladino, and Carl Paladino won that primary. And I think, Democrat though I am, I'm looking at the Republican primary this year, and I'm wondering, Lee Zeldin, Andrew Giuliani are pitching for the Trump support. Do they win the primary? If they do, then that's a statement about the Republican Party in the same way that the Democratic lineup is a statement about the Democratic Party. And, will we present a choice to the voters of New York that's pretty far right, pretty far left, or will we, hedge to where I think most of the voters are, which is closer to the middle?
So let's talk a little bit about one of my favorite subjects, a guy I know pretty well, and that's Andrew Cuomo. The legislature just won't let up on the guy. And they are saying, okay, you have all that money in your accounts and you shouldn't be allowed to take the money that you got for writing a book. Don't you think that in a way, and I'm not a big Cuomo fan, don't you think in a way they are doing themselves a disservice by doing that? Looks like they're picking on the guy, doesn't it?
Well, and it also applies to everybody else. I mean, if any of my former colleagues in the legislature, either house, leaves office with money in the till, they're subject to the same laws.
Sure.
The rules, Alan, for judges, when a judicial race is over, you have a certain amount of time to divest your fund. Even though you might run again in 10 years or 14 years, you're supposed to shut it down. And in some ways, that's really not a bad idea. I know it looks like it's an anti-Andrew plan, and, maybe because it has been triggered by that. But let's assume I leave office at the end of this term and I don't run for another office. I shouldn't just have a ton of money to play with. It would be logical for me to either donate it to certain kinds of entities or to return it to donors and not to have it as play money. You can use it for, subscriptions to newspapers. You can use it to buy people dinners, and you could rent a car on it and all that stuff. And I'm not sure once you leave office that that is a right use. But it does look like it's a tit for tat right now. So I do understand how it appears.
So let's talk a little bit about redistricting, George Latimer. New York will have to wait until August now to vote in primary elections for U.S. representatives rather than June. So this federal judge gave his stamp of approval for the delay. The congressional primaries are being pushed back after new Democratic district maps were deemed unconstitutional by New York's high court. A state judge and independent expert in Steuben County, of all places, are now busy drawing up new congressional and state senate maps. And New York is still planning to hold primary elections for governor and the state assembly in June. What a mess.
What a mess. I mean, how do you even unravel it? Clearly, you'd have to go back in the time machine to try to fix this. But just a few general comments. First of all, the correction back in 2014 that happened, that the amendments that were voted on and passed that changed the structure of redistricting, they were really done, with a thought to try to protect the Republican majority in the Senate that was on its way out. I ran for the state Senate in 2012. I had to run on gerrymandered lines that hurt Democrats. You remember the district, C.C. Katchip won a district that was carved for a Republican who ultimately won it the next cycle around, and so on and so forth. But then it got codified with 2014's amendment because now you had to have minority support in order to do redistricting. Well, that was a plan to fail, and I think everybody understood that. But when the lines went back to the Democratic majority in the legislature, they overreached. Clearly they overreached. They overreached on the congressional district. I live in the Sound Shore of Westchester County, the New Rochelle to Portchester corridor. That's where I represented in the assembly. And they attached that to a Long Island district because they didn't know if they could carry the district without those Democratic votes. That's an overreach.
You'd have to come over the water.
Yeah. And that's what opens the door to get thrown out. Now, I'd say one more thing quickly.
Sure.
I think that the state court should establish an elections law group of judges. You should not be able to judge shop, and no offense, but go to Steuben County, get a surrogate judge who's acting as the Supreme, go to him in Bath, New York, and let him be the primary judge to determine the New York lines. You should have a panel of judges established just for these kind of cases in Albany, in the same way that if you run for office in a multi-county district, you have to bring your petitions to Albany. You file the case in Supreme Court in Albany, and you have certain judges who are experienced in this, and then at least you have some credibility. When this system is completed, Judge McAllister, I have no reason to doubt his skill set, but you know, to have a judge in Steuben County make the decisions about how New York lines are to be done is just as bad as having the overreach that occurred in doing the new lines.
Let's switch directions here. I want to talk to you about Governor Hochul picks the 19th District Congressman Antonio Delgado as her lieutenant governor after Brian Benjamin, you remember him, resigns amid a corruption scandal. Will this hurt her when she runs for office?
Well, I think Lieutenant Governor Delgado is a terrific guy. He does not represent Westchester, but we saw him in Westchester in his early campaigns. He's raising money to come down. He's a very dynamic guy. I think he'll serve Governor Hochul well as a running mate and for the balance of this year's lieutenant governor. So I think she chose wisely in picking Antonio. His congressional seat now is up for grabs because Mark Molinaro, who I know I've served with both as a county executive and county and an assembly together, he's a very talented guy. It looks like, at the time of this conversation, Pat Ryan, the Ulster County executive, will be his Democratic opponent. And I know Pat, and Pat is a terrific young guy, military background. So that's going to be a competitive race. But you'd have to assume that Delgado dropping out of that race gives Molinaro a better chance to pick up the House seat. So that is a downside of the impact of this. From a standpoint of what's going to happen in the primary, I mean, you know, we don't really know if we're going to have repetitioning for Senate seats and congressional seats, but it does appear that in June we're going to be voting between Kathy Hochul, Damani Williams, and Tom Suozzi. So I expect Governor Hochul will win the primary. And then the big X factor is Andrew Cuomo going to run as an independent? And that, of course, we do not know.
Is there any sign other than what you and I may know about the guy that he will do that?
You know, there's no way to know. I mean, I've dealt with Governor Cuomo in many different contexts. You know, he will certainly play his cards close to the vest, and he has a cadre of advisors who are giving him advice. I think we'll know when we know. And if he does get in, I think, you know, it's going to be a real problem for the Democrats. He has popularity at some level. He will get votes, and they will probably all come out of Governor Hochul's total, perhaps enough to make the Republican the governor. On the other hand, he obviously feels that, he didn't get a fair shake. And, he's holding, resentment over that.
We're talking to Westchester County Executive George Latimer, a Democrat who always comes on and is always fascinating by giving us what we don't know. And that's important. So let's talk a little bit about Congressman Suozzi. I've interviewed him. He's hell-bent to win that primary against Hochul. Has he got a shot?
No, I don't think so, Alan. And I like Tom Suozzi. Tom was a terrific county executive in Nassau County. I've known him since he was mayor of Glen Cove. We've all known that he has the talent to be a statewide official. He visited Westchester back when he was mayor of Glen Cove, looking at possibilities for the future. So, you know, you remember when Clint Eastwood played Dirty Harry in the movies?
Indeed, I loved it.
And in every one of those movies, he had a line like, go ahead, make my day.
Make my day, yeah.
But it was one of the movies in which the line that was used was, a man's got to know his limitations. And I think in this race, it's not about Tom Suozzi's talent, which is apparent to all of us. It's about the limitations of a race where you have the first female governor. And, you know, when Governor Hochul became governor, there was a period of time in which Tish James was running for governor. It was pretty clear to me that no matter what an individual wanted to do, and it was rumored to look at this too, this was going to be a year where a woman was going to be on the ticket for the Democratic Party. And so I think Tom, as he did, 15, 16 years ago when he ran against Elliot Spitzer at the height of Elliot's popularity, he went headlong into the wind. And so I don't think he's going to win. I think he is a talented guy, but I just don't see it happening in a year like this. I think this nomination is going to be Governor Hochul's, and then we'll see how the general election plays out.
Talk to me a little bit. The New York Times is raising it all the time, and they are very powerful, about ethics reform. There doesn't seem to be a big taste for ethics reform in the legislature. What is it about ethics reform specifically that bothers these legislators that they don't want to do it?
Because it applies to us as a class of people. The minute you put some restriction and you restrict my ability to raise money, my ability to communicate. And, most of us, don't want to have our powers restricted. You know, we want to be able to do the things that somebody did in the past. I was in the state legislature when they changed the rules about going out to dinner with a lobbyist. And that was a big deal for lobbyists to take members out. And the members who've been around for a long time had some power. They loved going out with lobbyists for dinner. Well, I was fairly new when I got there. And the rules had changed. So I just went out with my colleagues to go to a Chinese restaurant. We all chipped in. You know, no lobbyist was buying us dinner. But the members who've been around for a while didn't like the fact that the rules had changed. And that's really what has to happen. If you want better ethics, you have to have more strict rules. I'll give you one example, Alan.
Sure.
I submitted a bill to the county legislature, which was passed, which created the hardest term limit, toughest term limit in New York State for county executives. 2 terms, and that's it. No another chance to come back, no 3 terms, 2 years, 2 terms, 8 years, that's it. Now, because it only affected me, the county legislature said, fine, we'll do that.
Sure.
And I had to do that because to try to have some other entity impose it would have been impossible. Another county executive would have fought it tooth and nail. And you need to have that sense of self, just like you said up front. They think we're all crooks. They think we're all bad guys. We have to do these things voluntarily to reestablish faith. And until and unless all of us, and I'm not just picking on the legislature, until all of us are prepared to say, you know what, to reestablish faith, we're going to put these restrictions in how we spend campaign money. That has to be tougher. There has to be greater scrutiny. There has to be ability to punish us when we don't follow the rules. Until we do that voluntarily, the people aren't going to have any faith in us. And right now, democracy is on the ballot. A lot of folks are saying, you know, this democracy thing, I want what I want. And if I can get it through a tough dictator type, that's what I'll go for that. You know, this democracy isn't getting us where we want to go. There are people who say that right now. And so I think we have to show the willingness to have these rules apply to us. And right now, I don't know that there's a consensus to do that.
You know, we did talk a little bit about the governor and her lieutenant governor choice. But I want to go back to that for a moment. Now she's got Congressman Antonio Delgado, and that could be troublesome to a lot of Democrats. I mean, you know, do you really want to lose a Democratic congressman with this kind of thing going on? Did she make a mistake in reaching into the Congress to get a running mate?
Well, as I said, I think, you know, she made the right decision for her ticket. I think, Lieutenant Governor Delgado strengthens her ticket, and she picked a person who can win the primary because you have two women who are already running, Anna Reyna and Anna Arquia, who are already in the primary. So if you pick the third person coming in, they have to come in with something under the hood in order to win that primary and to be her running mate. So Delgado is more than that. However, it does put a congressional seat in play. And the only thing I can assume is that, now I'll use Pat Ryan as the example again. If it is Ulster County Executive Pat Ryan who's running, and we see what the district lines look like, because, Alan, that's the other thing. We don't know what the district lines look like. You know, if the district has all of Ulster in it and it goes into some of the Democratic towns north of it in Albany, then it's a winnable district. If it doesn't, and it has a lot of, you know, Republican turf to the west of Ulster County, if it gets out of the Delaware, Schoharie, Otsego County, depending on how much, you know, turf you need, then we've lost the House seat. But since you don't know the lines, you have no way to evaluate whether you've lost the House seat or not.
So interesting. So interesting. Now, doesn't the governor, Governor Hochul, deserve a little bit of criticism, at least a little bit, for her original pick of Brian Benjamin, who resigned after a corruption scandal? Don't you think she should have known better?
Well, it's embarrassing. And, I served with Brian in the Senate. I sat next to him. You know, I had no idea of any ethical situations. And I think the message that it goes to all of us, including me as an executive in a county level, is you must vet people. And it applies not only to the lieutenant governorship, but your key commissioners. You really need to do the due diligence on it. And, you know, I have to assume that she just come into office. She had not put her team into place. I mean, she may have had a small team around her, but she didn't have her people in all different locations. There's pressure on her to pick a lieutenant governor right away. And the due diligence wasn't done. And it turns out to be an embarrassment. And I would also say that Brian, whom I like, needed to be forthcoming. If somebody says, are there any skeletons in your closet? And you say, no, I want to be lieutenant governor. No, I'm good. That's not good enough. But it is an embarrassment. Now, whether it's a fatal embarrassment or not, we'll see. And but I do think that, keep in mind one other thing, Alan, which it was David Patterson, when he selected Dick Ravitch to be lieutenant governor, mm-hmm. that it was established that there was no senatorial confirmation. And I believe there should be senatorial confirmation of a lieutenant governor. And, of course, the assembly folks will say a full legislative confirmation. That's what you have in Washington when you appoint a vice president to fill a slot, as you did with Gerald Ford and then Nelson Rockefeller. That vetting process would be advantaged by having the legislature sit in confirmation of your lieutenant governor pick. As it is now, I guess they used a particular law, David Patterson did, that allowed him to just pick the lieutenant governor, and it held up. I think it was defeated at a lower level, and then the higher court reversed the lower court. I forget the details. But they ought to have legislation to require a confirmation vote. And in that confirmation vetting process, some of these things might have come out.
Let me ask you a question. What are you hearing about abortion now that we have seen the Supreme Court draft opinion? What are you hearing about it in Westchester County?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, the fear is very palpable now that Roe v. Wade is going to be overturned.
Sure.
And if the Republicans take back the Congress in both houses and in due time the presidency, that they will pass a national ban on abortion. And that this has been a main plank of their platform for quite a while. They believe it. The majority of them believe it. The Republicans, who used to be pro-choice once upon a time, because it was passed in New York State with a Republican legislature, they don't exist anymore. And so the loss of a woman's right to choose is very clear and palpable. And not even though in New York we have the codification of Roe v. Wade, now there's an effort to do a constitutional amendment, that it is very likely that a Republican federal government will ban abortions across the board, and it will be upheld by a Supreme Court that is of a similar mindset. And the other thing that we hear about, by the way, is that this isn't the end of what this Supreme Court is going to do. Obergefell, the case that established marriage equality,
yep.
that's subject to being overturned. And if this court decides mm-hmm. to be the activist conservative court that the Heritage Foundation wants, they could revisit Miranda. The mm-hmm. interrogation rights. They could revisit Mapp versus Ohio, which was search and seizure. They could revisit Regents of California versus Bakke, which is affirmative action. They could strengthen Citizens United, which would make it even harder to have certain things happen. You'll never see a reversal of the fairness doctrine. You will have a conservative America locked into place with this Supreme Court over an extended period of time. And that's exactly what Mitch McConnell wanted. That's why they didn't interview Merrick Garland 6-7 years ago. They wanted to make sure that they had a Supreme Court that would make these changes. And that's what we're facing. We're not just facing Roe v. Wade, which is critical, and women certainly feel strongly about this issue. We're facing a slew of these things that will basically take the Warren Court and then whatever happened to the Berger and the Rehnquist courts, and the Roberts courts, and just flip them all over, and you're going to have America that looks a lot like 1928 America.
So, George, I guess the question I have is the rent too damn high? In other words, you sit up there as county executive of Westchester County. You've got a lot of rentals. How do you deal with this very sensitive subject about people are going broke because they just can't pay it?
Well, it is a tough situation because the invisible hand of the marketplace, and I have a corporate background before I came into public office, the setting of the marketplace is what sets Westchester's real estate high. It is in demand, and there are people that can meet that demand. A house comes out on the market anywhere in Westchester County, and it's a bidding war, even in some of the worst neighborhoods of our county.
Wow.
Government to adjust that. We try to develop affordable housing. It's tough to do. We got to get the land, then we have to get money, and then we have to get rent subsidies from the feds. And we're doing it in small portions. To make private home ownership affordable, impossible. It's an impossibility to make an individual private house. The best we can hope for is to have a multifamily unit affordable housing in greater quantity than we have now. And of course, what it does is is it hurts the diversity of the county. We want our senior citizens to stay. I'm one of them. We want them to stay. We want our workers to stay, our firefighters and our nurses and teachers. And some of them make decent salaries, but compared to what it costs to buy a house in Westchester County, they can't afford to buy a house in Westchester. You're looking at an average house. You'd look at the house, Alan, you'd say, hey, in Great Barrington, that house is probably $400,000. In Westchester, it's $1.1 million, you know, and it's out of the reach of the average person.
I just wonder whether your Democratic, you know, executive ship is in any danger. Do you think that Westchester will at any point find something more attractive in Republicanism?
I think if, and of course, since I'm now in my second term and I'm term limited, I'll if I obviously grant my years of life, if I complete my 3.5 years, I'll turn the car keys over to somebody else. I think Democrats in Westchester County, as long as we remember that we can be progressive, but we also have to be pragmatic at the same time. We have to look at the tax burden and address it. We have to make sure we address crime. And we have to do things like respect our first responders and show respect to our veterans, the kinds of things that don't usually get attached to Democrats. If we do those things well, then the fact that we're progressive, we want to convert, we're converting our bus fleet from diesel to electric. We are putting up solar collection panels to get off the grid for the environment. We have banned conversion therapy for the LGBT community. With the liberal things that we want to do will be accepted in Westchester County as long as we take care of some of the base things that people expect our local government to do. Westchester will be Democratic this year. It was Democratic last year. We will be Democratic this year ahead. I don't know what's going to happen on the island. I don't know what's going to happen in the rest of the Hudson Valley. My job, as I see it, is to present this vision of Democratic philosophy in my home county, which is a big county. It's not dominant, but it's a big county. And I think it's a model elsewhere, but everybody's got to do their own thing wherever they are. We're trying to do our thing right here in Westchester.
Well, George, I have to tell you, I always enjoy our conversations. And my piece of advice to you is you should run for governor. In any case... In any case, we're out of time. Our guest has been Westchester County Executive George Latimer. Again, George, thanks so much for joining us.
Alan, always a pleasure.